My name's Bob Hughes, and I'm pleased and privileged and proud to be the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Frederick. We're a unique congregation of people so bold that we've decided to stand on the side of love as we gather Sunday after Sunday to build community and further justice and open to mystery. It's a congregation where you can expect to be accepted as you are and also expect to be supported and challenged as you can become what you can be. I want to say something first about the letter you got this week, and for those of you who haven't read your mail or those visitors, for almost 2 years I've been the part-time consulting minister of the congregation here, and discovered recently that I need to terminate my contract with you at the end of March. So that's a little earlier than I had planned or anticipated or that you had planned. But it's with some sadness and regret and also some eager anticipation that I talked with that about the board on Thursday night. The sadness is I hate to leave you folks because I enjoy you. You're some wonderful people and a good congregation, and I've enjoyed being here. The regret is to terminate my contract earlier, 3 months earlier than I had planned. And the eager anticipation is to be a part of a community that Judy and I want to join in upstate New York. If we don't go now, then our name goes to the bottom of a rather long waiting list, and that's just what we need to do. I also want to say to welcome two friends this morning, especially Marie and Linda. We met, I guess, Marie first in when we were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And you were part of the Unitarian congregation there. I think you and Judy both attended the Cakes for the Queen of Heaven course. And lo and behold, Marie and Linda have kept up with us from Lancaster to Nashville to Winchester to Reston to here. And that hadn't always been easy. And I thank you for keeping up with us. And I want to be better about that. I want to be better about keeping up with family and friends and people we've met. So, thanks and welcome this morning. They came down from Pennsylvania to join us this morning. I want to share some thoughts with you regarding Sophia Foss. Her statement in their hymn book, "It Matters What You Believe," gets me to thinking about beliefs. Just what are beliefs? What I accept as true or ways of looking at the world that seem to be helpful for me, what is it? How would you define beliefs? And where do beliefs come from? Early on, it seems to me, usually they come from our parents. They pass on their beliefs about the world. The world is a great place to be, or the world is a scary place. We incorporate those beliefs when we're younger. And then come family and friends and teachers, and later on comes news reporters. As I've mentioned a few times, the news, TV news, is an exercise in fear. The world is a scary place, they would want you to believe. Or advertising, the world is a place, it'll be your way if you get our products. Where do we get our beliefs? And then the question is, who's responsible for what I believe? Is it those folks, those parents or friends or teachers? Who's responsible? And the answer is me. I'm responsible for my own beliefs. I'm in charge. And what Sophia Foss pointed out was that there are different kinds of beliefs. There are those beliefs that close us down and are defensive and have us look at the world in certain ways. And there are other beliefs that are more expansive and help us be open to the world as a beautiful place. And it's my belief, as hers, that the beliefs that open us are better beliefs. The fact is, we're responsible for choosing which way we'll look at the world. What will we believe about the world? To emphasize the aspect of choice, I want to share a reading from the Science of Mind from just yesterday, actually. This is an interpretation of expecting the good. Rarely do we get exactly what we want when we want it, But we always get exactly what we expect. Raising your level of expectancy is the best thing to do with your time. It takes discipline and persistence to build faith, but the results are amazing. It's easy to say that you expect good things to happen. But if you have a lot of past experience that shows bad things happen, it may be difficult to start expecting good all of a sudden. More than likely, it will be a process that unfolds through your diligent effort. Work daily on your belief system. That's the realization that you can change your belief system. Work daily on your belief system. You can change your experience one thought at a time. Let go of old beliefs in lack and limitation. Grab hold of new ideas of abundance and don't let go. Support your belief system by reading and attending classes or workshops. Stay away from naysayers and high drama people. Surround yourself with positive, like-minded people who are working to lift up their beliefs as well. And then that becomes less of a conscious effort and more automatic, like driving a car. If you continue your efforts one day, you will wake up and expect life to be good. Well, those one of the reasons to surround ourselves with people who are working with their beliefs is, as Brad mentioned, that we can do that together. Well, Sophia Lynn Foss got me started on some of that thinking. Who was she? I want to tell you a little bit about her and how she might be important to us. What she did in the 1930s and 40s and later was work with religious education. And she was kind of the religious education department of the Unitarian Association back in the 30s and 40s. Well, let me back up and say something about her life. She was born on August the 2nd, 1876. Now, that's a long time ago. That's the same year as the Battle of the Little Bighorn. General Custer and Sitting Bull. In 1876, 2nd of August, she was born. She was born in China. Her parents were Presbyterian missionaries, and so her early years were in China. As was the custom for missionaries then, when she got older, she came to this country for her education. She went to Worcester College in Ohio, graduated in 1897. She was a very devout Presbyterian Christian. She taught Sunday school all during her college years. The curriculum for Sunday school, Presbyterian Sunday school in those days, was the Bible. It was the Ten Commandments. And that was also the curriculum in Unitarian congregations as well, not just Presbyterians. That's what Unitarians taught, the Bible. And it was what I call the container model, in that I see your brain is empty and I need to fill it with what you need to believe and know about, in this case, the Bible and the Ten Commandments. And that was true not just with Sunday schools, but also in public and private schools. The container model, from my notebook to your brain. Well, her intention was to return to the mission field and be a missionary. In 1901, she took a part-time job in Chicago, at the University of Chicago, actually, with the YWCA. She wanted to take some more classes. And working there, she could take classes cheaper, so she'd be ready to go to the mission field. But she met this guy, Charles Foss, and they got married. There were two big influences on her life in Chicago. One was, it was a hotbed of biblical criticism, of looking at the Bible in different ways. And there was a faculty member there by the name of John Dewey. Now, that name may mean something to some of you. Big name in education, John Dewey. June 1902, Sophia married Charles Foss. His health wasn't all that great. They moved to New York, where he worked for the United Methodist Church, Board of Missions. And she went across the street to Columbia, Teachers College, and studied more there. And John Dewey moved from Chicago to Columbia, as a matter of fact. And so she continued her studies with John Dewey. So those are two major influences: her understanding of biblical criticism, another way of looking at the Bible, John Dewey and education. And then there came a third, which was her children. They gave birth to five children. Two died fairly early, as was fairly common in the early 1900s. But here's what Sophia said about her children. "The children who," this is a quote, "the children who joined our family circle were not merely the object of my educational efforts. They were the most potent source of my own education. In a vital sense, the children were unwittingly my major teachers. End quote. Those of us who are parents know being a parent is a real education. And she learned from her children. Her husband's health still wasn't good. They knew they would never be able to go to the mission field, so Sophia joined the Methodist Church so they could go to church together. She continued her studies, and she also got to see teachers at work in the Horace Mann School in New York. And she wanted somehow to incorporate what she was learning at Columbia with what she wanted to do in religious education, teaching Sunday school. What she came to understand was the importance of experience. That children have experiences of the world. And what we can do is start with those. She concluded that the religion of ancient peoples was based on their understanding of nature and how they related to nature, and asked, can't we do that also with children now? Here's a quote from her. What if today's children were allowed to express freely their reactions to the primary phenomena, birth and death, sun and moon and stars, dream, shadows, wind and rain? End of the quote. And so she came to the perspective that we really need to hold off on teaching Bible stories for a little later. The young children are not ready for that yet. Now, that did not make her very popular. She went across the street from Columbia to Union Theological Seminary, probably the most liberal seminary in the United States then and now, but still was not well received in many circles by those authorities. But at the same time, Riverside Church was being built in New York City. Some of you been there to Riverside? Yeah, great. Very unique congregation. When you go to New York, get up, it's just a little north of Columbia University, on 110th Street, somewhere in there. Visit Riverside Church and take the tour. You'll see stained glass of figures from the Bible, and there'll also be the Buddha and Confucius. It's a wonderful place, a wonderful place. It was being developed at that time. Harry Emerson Fosdick was the minister, probably the most liberal voice in religion in America at the time. He invited Sophia to come be the Sunday school director, and she jumped at the chance. 1933, she is getting to try out some of her ideas with the Riverside Church Sunday school. Now, let's see. Let me back up. She was born in 1876. She started seminary in 1923. She was 47. She started Riverside at age 57. But she still got a ways to go. She really wanted to set aside the container model of education. And so she actually listened to children. One day this four-year-old came up to her and he said, "Teacher, where did yesterday go?" How would you answer that? What she tried to be age relevant. She wanted to tell him that, well, yesterday went to the same place that the acorn goes when it becomes an oak tree. Yesterday's still there. But just to help people marvel at the mystery of time is what she came to. She wrote later, someday Peter's imagination will help him understand that there were yesterdays before he was born, and there were eventually he'll grow to understand there were yesterdays before his parents and his grandmother were born. Yesterday goes back into centuries and millennia. That approach to religious education became the core of Unitarian. And I say Unitarian, that hadn't had the merger yet. The Unitarian Association, religious education. Most folks were still teaching strictly the Bible, and she said, let's expand that. Let's hold off some of the Bible stories. She said, the book of Joshua is just not fit for children, for example. Or Abraham, if you want to sacrifice his firstborn child. Little kids don't need that. Let's hold off on that. Later on, they can understand some of the meaning of it, but not yet. Let's have our classes be experiential. Talk about life and death and moving and the gerbil and the seed, the roots of the seed go down in the cup before the plant grows up. Let's talk about that kind of thing. Let's have a place where children are safe, where they feel safe to ask questions, to play together, where the teacher will respect them and keep them safe. And that's how our religious education program is dedicated, helping young people feel safe. Now, she also felt that good religious education needed more than 50 minutes. She didn't get her way on this one, but she wanted 3 hours. With 3 hours, there would be opportunity to go outside, to get in the sunshine. There'd be opportunity for dance, for art, for dramatics, for meaningful spiritual growth in that 3-hour block. I wish I had grown up in a religious education program more like that. She felt that both ministers and religious educators ought to be aware of the latest in human development and psychological development. They ought to be up on science. They ought to know their science. Those ought to be included. Religious education involves the whole child, she felt, physical and mental and spiritual. Did anybody grow up with the Martin and Judy books? You did. Good for you. She wrote those and published those, the Martin and Judy books, with titles like A Brand New Baby, Meeting Children Where They Are, because we have a younger sibling born or a cousin. She had a book called Animal Babies. That sort of thing happens. And she wanted to bring that into the child's religious education. What's real for the child? And then she brought in stories from other cultures and other traditions. Things like Long Ago in Many Lands. The stories from Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam. She felt really we ought to delay the teaching of... Those stories were actually oriented toward children who were 7, 8, and 9 years old. We really ought to wait on the Bible stories till later when they can have that concept. Well, those are the guiding principles of some of her work. Here is another interesting quote, helpful quote, I think. It's kind of her philosophy of... became the philosophy of Unitarian Universalist religious education. We decided that the stories chosen should be more than interesting. In some pertinent manner, they should bear on the children's own living, their own experiences, and those told them from the long ago should be like two opposite currents of electricity. They should be different enough to attract each other, and yet fundamentally they should be so much alike that when they're brought together, a spark is born that unites the two into one common experience. So she was intentional about having stories from many cultures. She wanted children to be citizens of the world. Citizens of the world. Here's another quote. She wanted children to feel some of the human universals that bind us together in a common world kinship. Our finest moral and spiritual ideals have been shared by many peoples. I hope you'll see the display that the critical exposure folks have brought to us this morning in room 113 after the service. A wonderful way to share the power of community, that these young people have taken pictures to help others be aware of what's necessary and helpful in our world. There's a lot more I could say. I need to kind of wind things down here. When she did her... She held off most of the Bible stories, but she had the story of Jesus' birth in one of her books. She also included the miraculous stories of the birth of Buddha and Confucius. What she was trying to do was to give some understanding of how the stories first came to be told and what they meant to people, and she put those three together. And here's a quote. We hope that the result... Now, we's the editorial board. We hope that the result will not be merely a negative disbelief, that it may rather be a new appreciation of the significance to humankind of a truly great person, and a realization that all people everywhere feel touched by an unutterable mystery when in the presence of a newborn babe. And so there's another reading in our hymn book when the children come for the Christmas time. We used it on December 24th. And she knew that as children grew, they needed the Bible stories. And so she wrote books like, edited books like Joseph, Moses, Jesus, the drama of ancient Israel, Men of Prophetic Fire. Eventually she wrote The Old Story of Salvation. And in 1952, she published the underlying philosophy of the New Beacon series, Today's Children and Yesterday's Heritage. I had to read that book. I got to read that book when I made my transition to Unitarian Universalist Ministry. I don't know whether, Deb, you have to read that or not, but I bet you do, and I commend it to you. Yesterday's Children and Today's Children, Yesterday's Heritage. I made a lot of notes about that because I couldn't keep the book, and then I lost my notes. But yesterday, I found out that book is now online. Beacon Press has put it online, and it's a great... You seen it? It's there. Look, if you Google Today's Children, Yesterday's Heritage, look at it. I was going to get a used copy, but when I looked, they were $100 each. So I didn't. But it's online now, so take a look at it. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. Well, let's see. It's February 1959, at the age of 82, Sophia Foss was ordained at the Montgomery County Unitarian Church in Bethesda, which is now Cedar Lane, at age 82. I never met her, but she was the president of the LRETA, the Liberal Religious Educators Association. She was the president. I did meet later when I did my internship. I met the secretary of LRETA when Sophia was the president. And secretary loved her dearly and appreciated her contribution so much. She did say kind of confidentially to me that, you know, when she got in her 90s, she was a little set in her ways. She had a long life. She died in 1978 at the age of 101 and made major contributions. To Unitarian Universalism and religious education. We know, partly because of her, that children are not just little adults. They think differently, and we need to be aware of those differences and meet them in their developmental stages, and also to commit ourselves to a lifelong learning process. To accompany our children to the next level, all the while providing a safe place to learn and grow. Well, Sophia Leon Foss is one of my heroes in Unitarian Universalism. I hope you've enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about her. I'll close with a few more of her words. A good way to close. To build the beginnings of faith in God on a conception of the universe that our generation no longer regards as true is to prepare the way for a loss of respect for the Bible. And what is worse, to court a cynical atheism when the child is old enough to learn for himself. We want children to come to know God directly through original approaches of their own to the universe. Well, may the spirit of wisdom of Sophia be with us both now and forever.